Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and earlier in the program we talked about the changing demographics in Brooklyn's Sunset Park with City Councilman-elect Carlos Menchaca. Now we turn to changing demographics nationwide and what it means for the checkout line. Matt Carmichael is a journalist covering demographics and market trends, and he's now the author of a new book looking at what he identifies as the top 10 trends for American families. So we'll go through some of them now. His book is Biographics, B-U-I, Biographics, How Demographic and Economic Changes Will Reinvent the Way Marketers Reach Consumers. Matt Carmichael, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And as I said before the break, I know this book is technically for marketers, but it really says a lot about the state of American households. And the first chapter of your book really sets up one of the big 10 trends. It's called The Changing Middle Class, How the Income Gap is Polarizing Markets and Marketers. So why the changing middle class? Why not the shrinking middle class?
Well, you know, it kind of depends on how you want to define middle class. And because people want to define that differently, yes, you could argue that it is changing or it is shrinking, but we're also seeing kind of a metamorphosis of those who are in it and those who used to be in it.
And listeners, as we go through these changing trends, you can call in and react to any of them or see if they're popping up for you or your family or your community, 212-433-WNYC. So this changing middle class, a characteristic of that middle class that you cite is that it's financially drained. What does that mean people are buying or not buying? How does that represent a change in the marketplace?
Well, one thing that I've found is I was part of the book profiles 10 representative families that I was tracking throughout the research that led up to this project as well as through the book. And one thing I found that was interesting while I was talking to these families is that if you are a marketer, your competition isn't necessarily coming from the places it traditionally came from. So I talked to a 20-something single female in Champaign County, Illinois, named Liz. And Liz was telling me that she really wanted to save up to be able to buy a laptop for herself because she needed a new computer at her home. But she kept getting interrupted in that process because as she was moving into her later 20s, a lot of her friends were starting to get married, and she was going to all these destination weddings, and she was a bridesmaid and had to buy bridesmaid dresses and go to all these showers. And so if you're the laptop manufacturer, you probably don't think of the bridal industry as a competition. But because the dollars are getting stretched and the budgets are tight, everybody is making trade-offs, and it's not just within a product category. It can be across categories.
Trend number two is about affluence, and it's called How the Other 18% Live. Why 18%?
Well, the 18% is kind of the upper reaches of the income. So the 1% are a very, very select few Jay-Z's of the world. But if you really want to talk affluence, you have to kind of broaden that category a little bit to the people in the upper income reaches.
And so what's happening in this 18%? For example, you note that many of the people who used to consider themselves as affluent have been knocked down into what they might now call middle class. So how is behavior changing for this group?
So as the recession took place, before the recession, we were talking a lot in marketing about the kind of aspirational affluent, the people who thought they were on their way and were going to make it there. And because of the recession and the housing bubble burst, a lot of people who thought they were going to make that probably aren't now and are starting to realize that. And I think it was also, as I talked to my kind of representative affluent family, who was a married couple in Howard County, Maryland, one of the higher income counties in the U.S. And they led what seemed on the outside like a rather middle class life. They had two cars, they had a nice home. It certainly wasn't an extraordinary extravagant home by any means. It was, you know, it's 3 or 4 bedroom and in a kind of suburban landscape, maybe almost leaning a little rural where they are. And they have their one child, they have their nice cars, they have a lot of the things that people have these days, like iPads. And it just takes a lot more income to realize that in a lot of the country. And as I'm now the editor of a website called livability.com, and we talk about the great places to live. And I was just out in Palo Alto, which is a very affluent suburb. A 3-bedroom home there can start at 1.4, 1.6 million. And talking to the families there, they're also running into a lot of the same problems that families throughout the U.S. are facing. And even though these families would be considered certainly upper middle class into just straight up upper class, they're still running into the same problems of how do I get my kid into a good school and how do I get my kid to school and how do I balance being a dual income family in order to maintain this lifestyle with also being able to take part in my kids' activities or even just shuttling them back and forth to school. And so seeing the classes start to redefine a little bit on the high end has been really interesting to watch.
My guest is journalist Matt Carmichael, author of Biographics, How Demographic and Economic Changes Will Reinvent the Way Marketers Reach Consumers. Listeners, how are you seeing this in your own life or your own community or your own business with the economic doldrums that we've been in for 5 or 6 years now, or aspects of the recovery for that matter? Do you see buying patterns changing in what you sell or what you buy or what people around you buy and sell? And what does it say more deeply about who we are today? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And I'm going to skip ahead to your trend number 6, which is something we talk about all the time, the biographics of city living. And this is about the growth of urban life. And you say it's fueled by two very different groups, millennials and baby boomers. So do urbanites buy things that suburbanites don't and vice versa?
Certainly. And we also see that that impacts the way they buy. So if they are in a less car-dependent world, they're not necessarily making frequent trips, or they're not necessarily even making just the one big trip where they buy the whole carload full of stuff at Costco or fill up 3 shopping carts worth of groceries. It's more, what can I buy on the way to and from work, or what can I do in a quick errand on foot or on a bicycle? And the way we interact with cities really changes the way we interact with the retail environment within them.
Can you give us some examples? And are the millennials and baby boomers reflecting this in similar ways or different ways?
I think they're reflecting them in different ways. So one thing we've certainly seen is that a lot of the bigger box type stores are moving into the urban environment. And that's something that's been happening in the last few years, that you see a smaller scale down Walmart with a grocery store moving into a downtown area, or a similar footprint with a Target. And you're also seeing, of course, the death of the shopping mall in suburbia as that lifestyle pattern changes as well. I think there's something like 10,000 shopping malls in the U.S. that are on the ropes, dead or dying, mostly unleased, not getting enough traffic to really support themselves.
Really? Is that because people aren't living in suburbs as much as they did, or because people in suburbs are shopping differently?
A little bit of both. You know, we talked, or you talked in the previous segment about the idea of showrooming,
yeah,
of people who are going into stores, trying out the different products, and then they can even stand there in the store, research themselves, and say, oh, I can buy this cheaper on Amazon, and it'll be home pretty much by the time I am, due to the wonders of same-day shipping, which you see in the bigger metros especially.
So for people who never thought they would feel bad for a shopping mall, this is their moment.
Exactly. And part of it's the the same problems that everybody else is having with the recession, that it's harder to keep a brick-and-mortar store open. People are cutting back on the kind of products that they used to buy at the mall. So all these trends start to come together in different ways, and that is, I think, the most interesting part of, say, a book like Biographics or the work I do.
212-433-WNYC, Robert in Manhattanville. You're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Brian. So here's my experience. I have a small business. It's a small law firm. We do civil litigation mostly for smaller businesses, but wealthy businesses, entrepreneurs, and we do regulatory work. Since the Great Recession began, over the course of all these years, the clients have become very cautious, careful with the buck. Before, if somebody grieved them, they would look to litigation as a way to get back. Now, a lot of times they'll say, let's wait. Wait out what's called the statute of limitations. On regulatory stuff, they'll be, you know, before they would make an aggressive effort to try and get regulatory change. Now they're very cautious and careful. They ask for estimates constantly. They want all different types of billing arrangements and discounts and caps and things of that sort. And the caution, of course, makes it such that where they have a right to make money or to get back money, they're a little bit hesitant. And that hesitancy means that overall, forget about my business making less and my expenses having gotten less, they are allowing their rights to lie fallow, and they're writing things off much more. And this has a cascading effect.
Yes. So do you have a bird in the background or a squeaky door?
I do. I have my cockatiel.
Okay. Robert and his cockatiel on the air on WNYC. Thank you very much. And that's an interesting trend. I don't know if it's something that would come up in your book, Matt, but if the hard economic times have made us a less litigious society, that's interesting.
It is. And, you know, one thing he was talking about is something we see across a lot of different product categories, that consumers are coming in more educated, and they have more tools to research, and they have more time to research, and they're more invested in doing the research because they need to save the money where they can. So because of the smartphones and because of the internet, they're able to come in and say, I know exactly how much money I have to spend. I've researched the reviews. I've looked at all the different models. In car dealerships, you see this. They walk into the dealership knowing more about the car than the actual dealers. And we talk about that in the book a little bit as well, that they're such a more educated consumer. They know exactly what they want. They know exactly where to get it. They know exactly how much they want to pay for it. And they think that the world will just make that happen for them. And in a lot of cases, it does. Mm.
Does that relate to your trend number 8, which is about health care? And, you know, with the Obamacare website in the news, there was a striking section of this chapter for us about how people buy health insurance. People want to discuss their options with people. And you found that this is true of millennials and baby boomers and everyone in between.
Yeah. I have a lot of sympathy for the Obama administration on this because they were trying to do something that the government is not really used to doing in a lot of ways, which is explaining a really complicated project or product to a broad swath of America and become a very consumer-facing and technology-oriented marketer, essentially. And as anybody who's had anything to do with the healthcare system knows, it's really complicated stuff.
No kidding.
I feel for them in having to go from not being a marketer of these things to being, in some ways, the largest marketer of these products and ideas. And, you know, kind of back to your point, it's also an interesting position for people in healthcare and also in some related industries of having to kind of what's called sell through a consumer. So you as a baby boomer might be dealing with both the healthcare issues of your aging parents and also your own children, and in some cases your own grandchildren. And you are trying to be an educated consumer about all these different diseases and all these different life stages and all these different managing things from remote and from afar, as your parents might not live near you, but you want to make sure they're taking their medications and you want to make sure you understand the conditions they're facing and the various consequences and the various side effects and the lifestyle choices they're making and how that relates. And as the marketer, your customer is technically the parent, but the people who are really influencing that decision might be the children or the grandchildren. Hmm.
We have a few minutes left with Matt Carmichael, journalist covering demographics and market trends. His new book, Buy, B-U-Y, Biographics, How Demographic and Economic Changes Will Reinvent the Way Marketers Reach Consumers. And let's go quickly through three more of your top 10 trends that I think are really important and really interesting. But because we're running out of time, give me a quick take on each of these, okay? And you identified two of them as perhaps the most defining. But one, in your chapter on the changing middle class, you note that a big change for that group is the growing number of dual-income households rather than single-income households. And so your trend number four is changing gender roles in the home. Are dads buying things that moms used to buy and moms buying things that dads used to buy?
Absolutely. I think for a growing number of households, we are seeing the dads take a very different role within the household. And marketers have generally been slow to respond to that. They were slow to respond to moms being important in the first place because marketing used to be very, the father is the head of the household and the decision maker. Even if mom's doing all the shopping, he still holds the purse strings. And so it took marketing a while to catch up to the importance of moms, and now they're struggling to figure out what to do with dads, and they certainly have not gotten there yet.
All right. And your trend number seven, which you say, well, in fact, you call it, how boomers transition to seniors will define the economy. That's a strong statement.
It's a huge group, and the boomers have always remade America in their image and to their own whims. And as they begin to age, they are redefining retirement and redefining how that lifestyle looks, and they are more active, and they are retiring later, and they're retiring differently. So they're not necessarily all moving to a nice golf-friendly city in Florida. A lot of them want to retire in place. As I said, I was just out in Palo Alto, and they're seeing that the seniors are just remodeling their own homes, and if they don't have an bedroom on the first floor, they're putting in an elevator or one of the kind of chair rails that goes up the stairs. So we're seeing retirement start to change, and that's going to have huge impacts for the economy.
And finally, your trend number 10 out of the 10 trends, the car culture crash, how cars fit into millennial lives. And I guess this is a trend of decreased driving and car ownership, which you say could be the most important trend in the book.
Yeah, I mean, we have had a car-centric culture, both in terms of public policy and consumer behavior and just the way we lead our lives and build our homes. And as we start seeing those trends shift, and we get into some of the reasons for that in the book, I think that will certainly affect not only our built environment, which I talk about a lot, but also the consumer environment. And if we don't have the car to go to the big box in the suburbs, how does that change the way we shop?
And there we leave it with Matt Carmichael, journalist covering demographics and market trends, author of Biographics, How Demographic and Economic Changes Will Reinvent the Way Marketers Reach Consumers, and the parts we've been emphasizing so much about how we're reinventing the ways we live and American culture. Thank you very much. Really interesting stuff.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, culture critic Hilton Alves on his new collection of essays with the provocative title White Girls. It's kind of a black gay man's meditation on oneness, otherness, and love. Stay with us.